hitting $500,000 in monthly sales. I mean, if you are an e-commerce seller, that sounds like an absolute dream.
It's the goal.
Yeah, it feels like you finally made it. You know, you've reached the mountaintop. But what if I told you that reaching that exact number, $500,000 a month, is actually the most dangerous plateau a business can hit? Welcome to today's deep dive. We're so glad you're here with us.
It is a fascinating paradox, really. You look at the dashboard, you have all this money flowing through the business. The demand from customers is clearly there, but somehow the growth just flatlines.
Right.
And worse, the stress actually increases.
Exactly. And that is exactly what we are getting into today. We are pulling from a really detailed, I mean, incredibly eye-opening strategy guide by SPC Tech.
Yeah, it's a great read.
It really is. It's called Amazon Scaling Potential 2026.
Ah.
And our mission for this deep dive is to unpack the exact, you know, hidden structural leaks that trap Amazon sellers at that specific $500,000 mark.
Which is super common, by the way.
Right. But more importantly, we are going to map out the blueprint that the top 1% of sellers use to actually scale past $1 million in monthly revenue.
Okay, let's unpack this. Think about your own strategy right now. Are you trying to scale your business by just throwing more money at ads and hoping the volume naturally follows?
If you are, you're certainly not alone. I mean, that is the default reflex for almost every entrepreneur.
Just buy more ads.
Exactly. But getting stuck under $500K a month is almost never a demand problem. That's the crucial shift in mindset we have to make here.
Okay, so if it's not demand, what is it?
Well, the customers are still buying. The products are still moving.
Hmm.
The problem is this invisible structural friction building up inside the operation. To grow past this point, you don't actually need to go out and invent a radically different product.
You don't need like a viral TikTok moment.
No, not at all. What you need are better systems.
Which means before we can talk about scaling to a million, we have to understand the anatomy of the plateau itself. Like what is actually dragging the business down? All right, let's look at the mechanics of it.
Yeah. Imagine your business is the high-performance speedboat. You've got this massive engine on the back that's your customer demand, you know, your product market fit, and it is just roaring.
It's working overtime.
Working overtime, exactly. Right. But you aren't going any faster. Why? Because your hull is full of tiny, almost invisible holes.
Hmm.
You're slowly taking on water, and the engine is just burning fuel to keep you from sinking.
That is, that's the perfect way to visualize it. Because from the inside of the boat, you don't see the holes.
Right. We're just driving.
Exactly. It just feels like you're fighting a really strong current. It feels like normal, gradual friction. But the SPC Tech Guide identifies several very specific structural leaks that are quietly sinking these accounts.
And what's the first one people usually notice?
For a lot of sellers, they first notice it when they look at their margins and realize their ad spend is completely out of sync with their revenue.
Right, like the revenue barely moves from quarter to quarter, but the ad spend climbs every single month. How does that actually happen if sales are, you know, relatively steady?
The culprit is almost always a campaign structure that the seller just hasn't revisited or audited in months.
Oh, like a set it and forget it thing?
Yeah. When you first launch, you might use broad match keywords to cast a wide net. But over time, if you aren't pruning that, those broad match keywords start quietly pulling your budget towards search terms that were never, ever going to convert.
Wow.
You set your bids once, you leave them alone, and while you're busy running the other parts of the business, the competition and the cost per click rise all around you. You aren't buying more visibility, you're just paying a premium for irrelevant traffic.
And even if you manage to fix the ad spend, Amazon is still taking their cut on the back end, right? The guy talks a lot about fee erosion.
Oh, fee erosion is huge.
Yeah, this one hurts because it just eats into your margin without anyone actively tracking it.
Mm-hmm.
You've got FBA fulfillment fees, inbound placement surcharges, storage fees.
It adds up so fast.
It really does. The source material points out that all of this, combined with ads, can easily eat up 30 to 35% of total revenue for the average FBA seller.
30 to 35%. That is a massive slice of the pie. And here's why that matters so much at this specific plateau.
Okay.
Let's say you have a seller doing $500,000 at a 15% margin. They are in a vastly different financial reality than a seller doing that exact same top line revenue at a 25% margin.
Right, because the raw cash is totally different.
Exactly. The top line dashboard numbers look absolutely identical to the outside world, but the actual health of the business, the cash flow they have to reinvest in new inventory, couldn't be more different.
Revenue is vanity, profit is sanity.
Always.
But it's not just the math, is it? I mean, it's also the tech. The source brings up a really insidious leak, which is stale listings. And this isn't about, like, fixing typos.
No, it's much deeper than that.
Right. A listing that absolutely crushed it in 2023 or 2024 might just stop working today. Not because you changed anything, but because Amazon changed how it reads your page.
Exactly. Amazon's AI search, Rufus, fundamentally changed the game. It is a major blind spot for legacy sellers.
How so?
Well, it used to be about keyword density, you know, just stuffing the back end with exact phrases. But semantic AI doesn't just read words. It tries to understand the contextual intent behind a customer's search.
Ah, so it's looking for meaning, not just a match.
Right. Buyer search behavior shifts.
Yeah.
The cultural lexicon shifts. If your listing stopped evolving to match how people talk about your product in 2026, you are losing relevance signals.
So your listing isn't broken in a technical sense.
No, it's just no longer speaking the same language as the search algorithm.
Man. And while you're fighting the algorithm on Amazon, you're also incredibly vulnerable because, for most of these sellers, Amazon is their only ecosystem.
Which is terrifying.
Right. Yeah. If 100% of your revenue sits on one platform, you are entirely at their mercy.
You have absolutely no buffer. Single-channel risk is one of the biggest silent killers of momentum. If Amazon changes a fee structure overnight, if their algorithm shifts, or if a policy changes, your entire livelihood takes the hit.
Wow.
And the data from 2026 shows that policy and performance-related account suspensions actually rose by an estimated 12%.
Wait, 12% just from policy tweaks?
Yes, and it's largely because Amazon is leaning heavily into AI-driven monitoring.
Oh, of course. Bots.
Exactly. The enforcement is stricter. It lacks human nuance, and it is entirely automated. You can literally wake up to a suspended account because an automated bot flagged a single phrase in your customer messaging.
Which brings us to the ultimate bottleneck. The reason none of this gets fixed in the first place, founder overload.
Yeah, the human limit.
Think about it.
Yeah.
You're one person trying to source products from overseas, negotiate shipping, run the PPC ads, manage the AI-optimized listings, and handle customer service.
It's impossible to do well.
Naturally, the company's growth simply caps out at whatever you, the founder, can physically manage in a 168-hour week.
What's fascinating here is that these leaks rarely happen in isolation.
Meaning they stack up.
Exactly. You don't just have an ad problem. You have an ad problem combined with a stale listing problem, combined with creeping fulfillment fees, and you're simply too exhausted from running the day-to-day operations to step back and fix any of them.
Wow.
Most stalled sellers are suffering from two or three of these at the exact same time.
So if these issues are so incredibly common and they sound like things literally everyone deals with as they grow, it begs the question, who is actually fixing them?
Right. Who is surviving this?
Yeah. Who is breaking through to the next level?
Well, the data paints a very revealing picture. In 2025, over 75,000 independent sellers crossed the $1 million annual sales mark.
75,000? I mean, out of context, that sounds like a massive group of people winning.
It does, until you look at the denominator. Amazon has roughly 1.9 million active sellers worldwide. Yeah, so those 75,000 sellers only represent about 5 to 6% of the total pool. But more importantly, we need to correct a very common misconception about these numbers.
What's that?
That statistic is for $1 million annually. That breaks down to about $83,000 a month.
Right. And $83,000 a month is a great living, but it's completely different from our target today.
Exactly. Our goal today, based on the SPC Tech Guide, is scaling past $1 million monthly.
Monthly?
Yes, which is $12 million a year. The leap from $83,000 a month to $1 million a month is staggering.
I can't even imagine.
The available data suggests that to hit that monthly $1 million mark, you aren't just in the top 5%. You are entering the elite top 1% of all Amazon sellers globally.
Less than 1%.
Yeah, less than 1% actually pull off the systems required to sustain that volume.
Wow. Okay. That is a steep, steep climb.
It is. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, industry analysts are calling this the competition paradox.
The competition paradox. Unpack that for me.
It means that while fewer brand new amateur sellers are entering the marketplace compared to, you know, the Wild West days of 2020.
Right, the pandemic boom.
Exactly. Right. Fewer new people, but the ones who decide to stay and fight are becoming incredibly sophisticated. the middle of the market, that 500K to 2 million annual range, is getting violently squeezed.
Oh, I see.
They're putting in the exact same effort that gave them 25% margins 3 years ago, but now their margins are shrinking to 15 or 10%.
Why?
Because the top 1% above them are operating with ruthless systems.
Wait, let me challenge that for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Is tightening operations really enough? Surely, at a certain point, a competitor with a massive corporate backing and an endless marketing budget is just going to outspend you, right?
Mm.
I mean, no matter how good your internal math is, they can just buy up all the ad inventory.
It's a valid fear, but that's precisely where the math becomes your armor.
How so?
A massive budget burned on a terrible conversion rate, and unoptimized ads just accelerates a company's failure. It runs their cash.
Huh.
The sellers winning today do not necessarily have better products or infinitely deeper pockets. They have tighter operations. If your math is better, meaning your profit per unit is higher because you've minimized waste, you can actually afford to bid higher on the exact keywords that matter.
Oh, because your margins can take the hit.
Exactly. You outlast the giant because your dollars are working efficiently while theirs are leaking out of the boat. It is entirely about operational efficiency.
Okay, I love that. So better math and tighter systems are the ultimate competitive advantage. Let's get practical. Let's dive into the first actionable steps from the SBC Tech Blueprint to actually plug these leaks.
Yeah, we have to fix the foundation.
Right, and that starts with the ad spend we were just talking about. The guide emphasizes that calculating your real break-even ACOS. Walk me through that math, because I know a lot of sellers just pick an arbitrary target.
You're exactly right. ACOS, or advertising cost of sales, is where so much profit goes to die because people use generic industry targets. Like they'll say, oh, I heard 20% is good.
Right, just a random number someone said in a Facebook group.
Exactly. The guide gives a very hard, practical example of how to do this correctly. Let's say you sell a product for $30.
Okay.
Your landed costs, which means manufacturing, freight shipping, customs, everything required to get it physically into the Amazon warehouse is $18.
Okay, so 30 minus 18, 12 bucks left over.
Yes. So in this specific scenario, that $12 represents 40% of your $30 sale price. That means you can spend up to 40% of your revenue on ads before you cross into negative territory.
Oh, I see.
So 40% is your true mathematical break-even ACOS. Once you know your specific number, you don't just guess. You rebuild your entire campaign architecture around it.
And how do they recommend structuring that? Because having one giant campaign seems to be where the budget just bleeds out.
Exactly. You split your campaigns into distinct types. You isolate your exact match keywords, the ones you absolutely know drive sales, and you bid aggressively there.
Right.
Then you have a phrase match layer. And then you keep a very small, strictly budget-capped broad match layer, purely for discovery, just to see what new terms people are searching.
Okay.
But the most crucial mechanism here is adding negative keywords.
Tell me more about that. How does that practically work?
A negative keyword tells Amazon's algorithm explicitly not to show your ad for a specific search.
Okay.
So if you sell high-end leather wallets and your broad campaign is matching you to cheap plastic wallets, you add cheap and plastic as negative keywords.
Oh, that's smart.
By actively blocking search terms that attract unqualified traffic, traffic that clicks but never buys, you can recover 10 to 15% of your wasted spend almost immediately. It goes straight back to your bottom line.
Just by telling Amazon who not to talk to. That makes perfect sense.
Right.
But getting the right eyes on the ad doesn't matter if the listing itself feels like it's from 2023. Which brings us to listing maintenance.
Yes, crucial step.
The guide says to put your listings on a strict 90-day refresh schedule and completely stop the launch and forget cycle. Here's where it gets really interesting. I like to think of a product listing like planting a garden.
Okay, I like that.
You can't just plant the seeds, walk away for a year, and expect a pristine harvest. You have to weed it. The ecosystem around it changes. And in this case, those outdated keywords are the weeds, right? They're stealing the ad budget, the water away from the actual flowers, the keywords that convert today.
That is a brilliant analogy, and it perfectly captures the mechanism at play. Because the ecosystem on Amazon has absolutely changed with Rufus AI.
So how do you actually weed the garden?
You go into Amazon's brand analytics. This tool shows you the actual search frequency rank of terms across the entire platform. That back-end search term that ranked your product on page one back in 2024, You might look in brand analytics and see its search volume has plummeted or the semantic meaning has totally shifted.
Wow.
Checking this data every 90 days to ensure your back-end terms align with what customers are actually typing into the search bar right now is no longer an advanced guru-level tactic. It is a mandatory quarterly maintenance task.
Okay, so we've weeded the garden. We've restructured our ad campaign so they're anchored to real mathematical profitability.
Yes.
We've optimized the listings so the AI algorithm knows exactly what we're selling. The engine is finely tuned and the hull is patched.
Beautiful.
But as we mentioned earlier, as long as 100% of your revenue sits on Amazon, your beautifully tuned engine is still at the mercy of a single platform's shifting rules.
Yep, the single channel risk.
How do the top 1% protect their operation from that catastrophic risk?
They de-risk. They build a moat around the business, and that requires a two-pronged approach.
Yeah.
Defensive monitoring and offensive expansion.
Let's start with defense.
Defensively, you must build a weekly account health routine. You cannot wait for Amazon to email you with a problem. You need to check specific metrics every single week, order defect rate, or ODR, late shipment rate, valid tracking rate, and any subtle policy notifications.
And the guide points out a really clever, proactive trick here regarding those metrics.
Right. It's about setting internal triggers.
Okay.
If Amazon's official limit for your order defect rate is 1%, you do not wait until you hit 0.9% to start investigating.
Because by then, you're toast.
Exactly. One bad review pushes you over the edge, so you set your own internal trigger at 0.5%.
Oh, wow.
If your defect rate hits 0.5, your team investigates immediately. You find the defective batch or the shipping error and fix it. By the time you hit Amazon's limit, it's already too late. You are already at risk of an automated suspension.
That is such a crucial mindset shift. Proactive versus reactive.
Exactly.
But even with perfect account health, you still need a backup plan. What if the AI just makes a mistake?
Yeah.
That brings us to the offensive expansion. The guide is very specific about this move to a second channel like Walmart or Shopify, but only with your two or three best-selling items. Do not try to copy your entire catalog of 50 variations over on day one.
You have to keep it manageable because you are learning the mechanics of a completely new fulfillment and advertising system.
Right.
If you expand to Walmart, for example, the mechanism for ranking is totally different. You want to apply for Walmart fulfillment services early because the bureaucratic approval takes time.
And what if you go the Shopify route?
If you choose to build a Shopify store, your problem isn't fulfillment, it's traffic. You have to bring your own customers.
Wow. Yeah, there's no built-in audience.
Exactly. So you spend the first month just dialing in the checkout process, testing the mobile load speed, and setting up email capture. You don't blast it with expensive Google or Meta traffic until you know the site actually converts.
I want to pause and ask you, the listener, to really think about your own business right now. If your Amazon account vanished tomorrow morning because of some random AI-flagged policy issue, what is your backup plan?
It's a scary question.
Do you have a way to reach your customers? It's a terrifying thought. But it also leads to the most common question. How do we possibly find the time for all this? We just talked about founder overload.
Yeah.
Now we are adding 90-day audits, weekly health checks, and a whole new sales channel.
This raises an important question about the life cycle of a founder. To do this, you have to radically embrace delegation and automation.
You have to let go.
You do. The SPC Tech Guide argues that you must hand off the two biggest time sucks first, PPC management and account health monitoring.
Why are those two specifically?
Because they're highly measurable, they are data-driven, and they're repeatable processes. They do not require the founder's intimate subjective judgment about product development or brand voice.
It's hard for founders to let go of the ads because that's where the money is spent,
mm-hmm.
but a specialized agency or an in-house media buyer is going to be far better at analyzing those spreadsheets every day than a founder who is stretched thin.
Completely agree. And for the things you can't hand to a person yet, you use automated software tools.
Right.
You use software to track real-time profitability per SKU. You use inventory management tools to flag exceptions, like a sudden, unexplained drop in stock levels at a specific fulfillment center.
Management by exception.
Mechanism here is management by exception, yeah. The goal of automation is to only surface the anomalies that actually require a complex human decision. You shouldn't be clicking through 50 products a day just to confirm they are in stock.
That makes total sense. And there is one final piece of the operational puzzle the guide mentions, which I thought was a fantastic, often overlooked detail, cleaning up your actual Amazon storefront.
Oh, yes. Sellers spend hundreds of hours agonizing over individual product detail pages, but they forget that many shoppers click the brand name and land on the main storefront page.
Right, the landing page.
If a mobile shopper lands there and has to click three different times, navigating through clunky menus just to find your best seller, you are losing demand.
Just from friction.
The drop-off rate on mobile for every extra click is massive. You have to design the storefront to cut the friction. Put your highest converting hero products right at the top of the page.
This has been incredibly eye-opening. We've gone from a sinking, overloaded boat to a tightly run, mathematically sound, diversified operation.
That's quite a transformation.
So what does this all mean? When we look at all these operational steps, the core distinction from the guide is the fundamental difference between scaling revenue and scaling profit.
Huge difference.
Scaling revenue can actually hide a shrinking margin. You could double your sales volume, feel incredibly busy, and take home less actual cash.
Yeah.
But scaling profit means every new dollar of revenue is worth more than the last one because your systems are efficient.
And notice that none of the fixes we discussed today require a massive new ad budget or a viral marketing campaign.
Right, not a single one.
They just require treating your account like a seven-figure corporate business before the revenue actually hits that level. If you start plugging these structural leaks, fixing the ACOs, weeding the listings, actively managing the single channel, risk the timeline to see meaningful movement, is usually just 2 to 3 quarters.
It's about building the heavy-duty infrastructure so that when the money comes, it can safely flow through without breaking the pipes.
Exactly. And the data strongly suggests that building this infrastructure, especially launching that small second channel, is much easier to manage before you hit the $1 million mark.
Makes sense.
Waiting until you're huge and stressed means you're trying to build a lifeboat while the ship is already taking on water under intense pressure. Build the lifeboat while the waters are calm.
Such a great point.
Yeah.
And as we wrap up, I know you had one final thought from the research that you wanted to share.
Yes, there's a lingering idea from all of this that I think is really worth reflecting on. As e-commerce platforms lean ever harder into artificial intelligence, we're talking about AI-driven account suspensions, AI-curated semantic search results like Rufus, automated inventory planning the landscape is fundamentally shifting beneath our feet.
It really is.
Will the million-dollar sellers of tomorrow really be the ones who craft the most innovative, unique products? Or will they simply be the ones who build the most sophisticated internal systems for managing and adapting to the machine's ever-changing algorithms?
Wow. That is a wild, slightly dystopian, but very real thought to leave on. Hmm. Are we building for the human customer, or are we building to appease the algorithm?
Probably a bit of both.
It's probably a bit of both, yeah.
Yeah.
But you definitely cannot afford to ignore the machine. You have to patch those tiny holes in the hull before you can safely open up the throttle. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We hope you walk away ready to look under the hood, find those hidden leaks, and build a system that truly scales. Until next time.